I mean, that was one of the things that really, that was the first things that I remembered, was feeling safe and feeling like I was with people that I felt so proud to be amongst, and feeling like I was just, while having the best time of my life, learning and just like enjoying the view. It was incredible.
That was Anne Hathaway talking.
No one likes her.
Talking. I like Anne Hathaway.
Right, you're the one.
Numerous times. She's very nice. I'm not a Hathaway.
She's an actress.
Right? I'm a Hathaway lover. And I'm Neil Rosen, and that was Anne Hathaway talking about her new movie, Ocean's 8. We'll hear from Sandra Bullock later. We'll hear from Bill Bregoli in a moment.
Yeah, why not?
Who's going to tell us all about Ocean's 8, and we're here with Bill McCuddy.
Yes.
And I'm Neil Rosen, and also we're going to talk about the notorious RBG. That's Ruth Bader Ginsburg. She's got a documentary that's
out there. You Ginsburg'd me.
And Bill's going to talk about Westworld. I'm going to talk about the new HBO show, Succession. We're going to talk about the Netflix, the season finale of David Letterman's show.
Oh, that was it? So that's the series finale, because they only hired him for this year, right?
Probably do more.
Yeah, I bet they do it. I bet they do it again.
It's called My Next Guest Needs No Introduction. And the season, or possibly series finale, I doubt it's a series finale, was with Howard Stern. And we're going to talk about that. And we're also going to get into some other things. For example, how the latest Star Wars movie, Solo, A Star Wars Story, tanked the box office.
Apparently, well, Solo was the people who went to see it.
Yeah. All right, so Bill Bregoli, take it away. Tell us about Ocean's 8.
Remember Ocean's 11?
Vaguely. Ocean's 11, 12,
same thing, only with
13.
Girls.
same
plot. Same thing, only with girls.
It should have been called Ocean's Estrogen.
Same plot.
Pretty much the same plot. Sandra Bullock is the sister of George Clooney's character. Hence, they could use the title Oceans again, because that's her family's last name.
Right.
He's dead.
He's dead?
So
he's
the
dead.
Cameo that everyone was talking about, all these cameos, and we talked about it last week about how the film went long and they had to cut it, and like some of the cameos got 86'd. But the cameo, and this is a spoiler, obviously, but it's... You've already said he's dead, so the cameo for him is just his picture, like by her bedside.
That's
or
it.
Something, right?
You know who does show up from the old...
Can I guess Matt Damon?
Nope.
No, he got cut out. Oh. I'm told that actually that he was one of the people that did film something. Does Cheadle have a thing in it?
Nope.
All right.
You're going to be guessing all afternoon, and I'm just going to tell you. This goes all the way down to Elliot Gould.
Oh, Elliot Gould actually has a cameo.
He shows up in a crypt, I guess you call it, or the mausoleum where Sandra Bullock is talking to the ashes of George Clooney.
Wow.
And telling her once she gets out of jail. So she assembles the whole group of women, and they decide to heist this incredible necklace made by Cartier years ago. And... that's it. That's kind of how they gather a crew.
Do it during the Met Ball, the
right.
Annual
the Met Gala.
Gala.
You know, here's
don't
the
say
thing.
Gala. That's a joke in the show.
This. What's interesting about this is that is such a New York centric thing that the rest of the country probably
is it,
doesn't
do you
know
think
about.
The rest of the country is not aware of that.
No, I think that
event?
I think it's a very New York-y thing that proves that to the flyover states. And I'm not like one of these Fox News people that says Hollywood only knows about what happens in New York and L.A. But I will say about this that, like, that's a thing that happens. It has a massive red carpet. It has a theme every year. People come dressed to the tens, not even the nines. And, like, this is the year that J-Lo showed up with A-Rod, and he had, like,
the theme this year was Christianity in fashion, which happens to be an exhibit going on currently that my daughter saw also at the Met.
Right,
presently.
Which is supposed to be great. But again, New York-centric.
Cardi
sure anybody
B
else around
there,
the country cares at all about this.
He was wearing a miter hat.
There you go.
So did and Andy Cohen came with Sarah Jessica Parker, and she wore some kind of a crazy... kind of
well,
had
I
to.
Couldn't tell you if, you know, I mean, we're all aware of the Cannes Film Festival and we're doing the show out of New York. I don't know if the Met Ball, I mean, you know.
Gala.
The Met Gala is.
Don't say gala.
Is known.
That's right.
I mean, it gets a lot of coverage, you know, on national news and national.
Well, Anna Wintour and Vogue magazine, everything makes a big deal out of it. But this is a perfect example of something that used to just be a New York thing, and the only reason anybody around the country would know about it now is because it gets national coverage.
All right,
so
well, it doesn't
Entertainment
even
Tonight shows no. up, Hollywood Elsewhere shows up,
but
blah, blah, blah.
It doesn't
blah, blah,
really
blah.
Matter, does it, Bill? Because, you know, you could have made a fictitious event that they wanted to pull a heist off of. They're
right.
just using
yeah,
this as a backdrop yeah. where they're going to pull off this heist. And I'm and Anne Hathaway is wearing the necklace.
Right.
And she's like, what is she, like a famous...
she's a famous actress.
She plays
famous.
A bitch. There's a stretch.
And she's a she's a famous actress. And right, and Bullock gets out of prison, and she puts a crew together, which includes
right.
Mindy Kaling and Rihanna. Rihanna's
Sarah Paulson, who
Sarah
has a
Paulson
kid that has to
an
go
Asian
to.
Woman named Awkwafina.
Awkwafina is
like
the
drink,
big star.
But it's a woman.
yeah.
And
it's
and
star
Kate Blanchett.
Studded. What's that?
And Kate Blanchett.
Kate Blanchett, who's a very prominent role in this. Kate
yeah,
Blanchett.
She's a nightclub owner who, in the very beginning, is watering down drinks. She's watering down vodka. To make more money at her nightclub.
How does Bullock, a.k.a. Ocean,
right.
know all these women? Were they like
they've all done heists together before. Different. They've all kind of worked together or with Kate Blanchett.
Apparently in movies we've never seen.
And Bullock's in prison because one of these heists she was snagged on, apparently.
Yeah,
and,
that's it. She's let out.
And she's let out because she gets on parole and goes, I'm going to be an upstanding citizen. Or she's
let
out
it.
Because
she doesn't want a nice,
well, let's
quiet
talk
life.
For a second about the female heist movies that we've seen in our lifetime. You know, this is the year of Me Too, and this is the year of everything getting gender swapped, and I'm not against that at all.
No,
not at all.
Female.
Not at all. I could care less whether a guy or a woman pulls a heist off. But really, a lot of people actually have been pointing out recently that it's kind of, remember Set It Off with Queen Latifah and Jada Pinkett? And like,
okay.
So there's that, and there's the movie Bound with that those brothers, those crazy brothers did. Now one's a sister. That
both sisters.
The Wachowski.
Well, yeah, they both had gender?
Yes.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm late to that party.
The
anyway.
Wachowski sisters now.
Okay, so, and that was great. Yeah. That was great with... one of the...
Gina Gershon and Jennifer Tilly.
Right, Jennifer Tilly. I was going to say one of the women that was married to San Simon from Simpsons. But anyway, so this is like this is in a niche,
yeah.
this idea.
Well, were you bored by the movie, Bill? Did you like the movie?
Actually, the woman sitting next to me during the screening noticed that I was nodding off while
there.
Wow.
You go.
I don't think, I honestly don't think I did.
Bill Regoli acid test. Does he stay awake for the movie?
Yeah. It's directed by Gary Ross.
Right, who did Seabiscuit and also...
The Hunger Games movies.
What's that?
The Hunger Games
right.
movies. So he worked.
But does Soderbergh have any role in this at all? Is he like an executive producer or anything?
I think he might be, further up the chain.
Yeah but I don't
Jerry
think...
The late Jerry Weintraub, who was also involved, was producing this as well.
Right.
Okay, so since it's pretty much, they say, inspired by the Ocean's 11 story... compare it to Ocean's 11. Is it Ocean's 11 a better movie?
You know what? It lacks even Steven Soderbergh. It needed a little more snap in the direction and the characters.
Funny?
All the characters have one trait. That's how you can tell them apart. Nobody has really very much depth.
It is
sort of funny. There are some
Ocean's 11,
in there.
Each character was kind of like, a lot of characters were funny. I mean,
there are some jokes, but they
fall flat.
Some of them work, some of them don't.
Hmm.
Helena Bonham Carter.
Women aren't funny. Jerry Lewis said it. Let's repeat it.
I don't agree.
I got a feeling if they
had gone
with a woman director rather than Gary Ross, it would have actually come off a little better because she would have kind of known what to do with women. Gary Ross, this could have been men in this movie.
Women would like that it was a men's movie that just women played the part of. I mean, right? I mean, if it could have been interchangeable, that will be the thing that feminists will say, oh, well, that's good. We can do the same thing that guys can do.
I don't know, but there's nothing womanly about any of it. There's that. I think they could have made some interesting points that they don't make in this movie.
What could they have made, Bill?
Well, one thing that they kind of skip over, but you notice, is that a lot of women are able to pull off their heists in this movie because they're women of color or older.
Oh, I see.
And they're not really noticed.
So it's trying to be politically correct on a bunch of levels.
Yeah, but they don't really make... Only I realize that. I mentioned it to a few people at the junket that I went to, and they're like, oh, yeah, you're right. But they had no clue. At one point, Mindy Kaling is working as a dishwasher in a restaurant. That's how she's able to hide the jewels. At one point, they've got the jewels. Mindy Kaling's got them. She shoves them in the water because you can't see the jewels underwater. And nobody really notices her because it's just another woman of color doing a menial job in a restaurant.
Mm.
And that stuff would have been a bit more
interesting. That doesn't seem like it advances the women's agenda.
How's Rihanna in the movie? What is she doing in the movie?
She's a...
Can she act?
Yeah, she does okay. She's a high tech expert, so there's a lot of looking at computer screens.
Oh, she's the Jet Li part, or she's the right?
Well, there is a person doing the acrobatics, and it's a guy, but he's not pulled into the very end of the movie. They say, "Oh yeah, and we did this." There's a weird point in this movie where you've seen the whole heist go down, and then Cate Blanchett tells you different things about the heist that you didn't realize that you all of a sudden see in flashbacks.
And that's clever or kind of clunky? It doesn't work. It's like it's a twist for a twist's sake.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you think the movie will do well? And would you recommend the movie?
I'd recommend the movie, but I wouldn't kill myself to go out and see it either. Wait for it to come to cable or something.
Is a cable?
Wait for it to show up on DVD kind of thing. Yeah,
okay. I think it'll make a little money
the first week. I'm sure that
the woman who probably was paid the most and didn't, and was one of the executive producers, I'm sure, feels that it was good to women. And so, what did Sandra Bullock have to say?
It's just women taking care of each other, women being good to each other, women stepping back and letting the more gifted step forward in the heist, recognizing talent and saying, go out and shine. Mm-hmm. I've got your back. Sure, we can fight, but we're fighting for the greater good, which is a whole lot of money. But
I like what Sarah Paulson had to say, which is that she needed the money because her kid goes to a private school in New York City, which is like obviously the most expensive place.
That's a very inside New York thing.
Yeah, but I think the rest of the country will get that. I mean, I still think the Met Gala is like a weird thing to build a story around. But if you're going to do a female-centric heist movie, then, you know, what do you have to choose from?
About last week, Bill. We were talking about our love for the Sidney Lumet movie, The Anderson Tapes, with Sean Connery. They pulled off a heist in a fictitious place. You could have easily, as I said a few moments ago, come up with a fictitious party.
I don't think the Met Gala gets in the way of the movie. Acting like it's not.
You think it's a weird thing to be. I mean, I think better choose a real event than a fictional event.
Okay, fine. Yeah. I'll give it that.
It's an excuse for some pretty cool sets.
Okay.
And did you get the sense that they filmed any of the movie at the real Met Gala? Did they like go to the red carpet?
Sitting next to me during the press conference were three women who worked for the Met, who helped Warner Brothers with some scenes that were shot there. But a lot of the heist was actually shot on the soundstage because they could have ruined some artwork. But yeah, parts of it were definitely filmed there.
Well, before we move on, I will say that I have heard many reports from not my friend who produces the movie, because he keeps telling me how great it is. I won't mention his name, but there have been reports that it got reshot a bunch of times and that they did some more. That they did some rewriting on the set and stuff. So I wouldn't call this a troubled movie, but at the end of the day, it looks okay and it comes across as a real movie. And
yeah.
How are Bullock's comedic skills in the movie?
Like she's never been in a comedy movie before?
I want to know if they utilize...
Well, her character is kind of hard-bitten, so she can play the...
She's an ocean.
Yeah, she's an ocean. She's a schemer. It's less about jokes. Apparently, the funniest woman on the set, as far as working with, was Helena Bonham Carter.
Really?
Yeah, and she apparently came out with a giant tray of it. I always have trouble pronouncing this name. Charcuterie?
Yeah, okay. Charcuterie. That's close enough.
Charcuterie, yeah. She came out with a giant and offered people pieces of meat during filming.
Nice. Is she still married or involved with...
Tim Burton?
I think that's over.
Yeah. I think that's over. So there was an article in The Hollywood Reporter that talked about how there are all these female reboots of, like, Overboard is one.
Right.
And obviously Ocean's 8 is kind of a reboot of the Ocean's 11 one. What were some of the other ones, Bill?
The list is so short. I didn't read the article you're referring to, but, like, I think that... Again, I want to be on this.
Those Ghostbusters.
The female Ghostbusters.
You didn't read it. You sent me the article, but
yes,
you didn't
yes.
Read
I'm extremely
article.
Lazy, and I think people who listen to this podcast know that already.
Well, the article goes on to say about how Ghostbusters, the female Ghostbusters, had like not only did it lose a lot of money, but all these Ghostbuster original 1984, the original Ghostbusters fanatics were just so vehemently opposed to.
Well, they were from the announcement, though. They were not going to be pleased no matter what that movie was, yeah, in my opinion.
Maybe that's true. But are there more on the way? Are there more of these females?
Please, are you kidding me? I mean, in this whole year of Me Too and everything,
what's coming?
You know what's funny is, like, every couple of years they mention about how James Bond should be a woman. It was maybe going to be they had
Atomic
the Jinx
Blonde
character, and they had the Atomic Blonde is certainly a female driven spy
the
movie.
Divergent series.
Red Sparrow was a huge bomb.
But Hunger Games is a female protagonist.
Yeah.
So is the Divergent
Lara
series.
Lara Croft, the Tomb
Woodley.
Raider.
Right. So I mean. You know, Wonder Woman made mega bucks at the box office, you know?
Right.
So these aren't necessarily.
But Wonder Woman is a.
Wonder Woman, you could say.
Is a Wonder Woman. You can't go, that was a remake of Superman
right,
or anything. But
the Hunger Games, they bought the rights to the
book
series
no,
as they did.
100% you're correct.
You know,
I never say this, but for once, you're right.
Right. So, and those movies are doing killer at the bottom. They're doing really well. They're
right.
Doing great. They're not getting
killed. I think what we're saying is when the stories are good and not derived from something else, I mean, when you say to me, this is an Ocean's movie that they've just put women in, I think you failed from Jump Street. I mean, I'm sorry to be that way, but I'm like, Wonder Woman is a uniquely female-centric movie, and an Ocean's movie that just finds a sister we didn't know about and builds a whole story around it is not the same thing.
Well, listen, they made the protagonist in the Star Wars movie a woman, you know, not the Solo thing, the last
right.
couple of installments. You know, you want to go back to Ridley, the Sigourney Weaver character, an alien, you know.
100%. And
you know,
and
the,
great.
You know,
and
so, I mean,
and,
there are actually.
Yeah,
it's not
it's,
like a
it's
brand
possible.
Thing. And, you know, I'm glad that they're doing more of them. I don't know how. I don't think they'll fail or succeed on the basis of gender. I think they fail, like you said, Bill McCuddy, on the basis of whether they're good movies or not.
Right.
Wonder Woman was a really entertaining good movie that most
And I think Ocean's enjoy. 8 will I think Ocean's 8 will make a lot of money this weekend. That's my prediction.
Well, I agree with Bill Bergoli. I think it'll do okay the first weekend, and I think it's going to drop off, and I don't think it'll lose money for Warner Brothers, but I think it's not going to be this like they probably, correct me if I'm wrong, but I bet you they left the door open at the end of the movie for the sequel, you know.
Not really.
Really?
Yeah.
No, because I'm saying I
love
don't know
it
if
when
we're
you're wrong.
See an
Ocean's, I so love it when you're wrong.
I don't know if we're going to see an Ocean's 9. You know, with this cast. But who knows? I don't know.
Well, you mentioned Solo, and that's was...
That's tanking, man. That's,
you know, I was the lone guy, like, two podcasts ago going, I was wrong. This is a really good movie.
Well, just because it's not doing well at the box office doesn't mean that it's
right.
wrong it that it's
fun.
Not a good movie.
Right.
I enjoyed the movie.
I feel bad but that it's not making more money.
I thought Alden Ehrenreich did a pretty decent job considering...
That's what I said.
Yeah,
we were both on record with that.
Yeah.
Like, I heard it was going to suck, and I'm like... And then, you know what I started thinking about?
I was entertained by
I started thinking about, based going back to this female-centric thing. Like, I started thinking about how everyone was complaining that, including me, that Alden didn't look anything like Harrison Ford.
Maybe that's what turned people off to
But then I thought about the Lara Croft thing, and I thought, oh my God, they did the same thing.
Replacing
with
Angelina Jolie.
Yeah.
With
Alicia Vikander.
Right.
And no one said, oh, Alicia Vikander doesn't look anything like Angelina Jolie. That never came up.
Here's the difference. First of all, Lara Croft was a extremely successful video game, okay, that made way more money than any, I think, than any of these Lara Croft movies. And it didn't have the cachet of, I mean, you fuck with Star Wars. I mean, Star Wars... It's got Lara Croft does not have the following. The movies do not have the following that the Star Wars.
I think it had a devoted following. I mean, like
I
understand the point you're trying to make, but I think that
here's why Solo, in my opinion, is not doing as well at the box office as Disney would like. And there's two real
Disney, by the way, according to this article, is going to lose a cool $50 million.
Yeah, but they've made so much money on their Marvel Cinematic Universe that's like nothing to them.
It's a day's gross for
But what does that mean for... Let's put the conversation forward. What does that mean for the future of
the problem
prequels?
There's two problems with this movie. One is the one that you just brought up, Bill McCuddy, is that even though we both think Alden Ehrenreich, all three of us think Alden Ehrenreich did a decent job playing the young Han Solo, a.k.a. The older Harrison Ford role, I think a lot of people maybe got turned off and said, I don't want to see that. You know, like, I don't want to see this guy doing
it. Fucked with the formula. Yeah.
But more importantly, I think the real reason that people, the number one reason, like leaps and bounds, why people have not turned out to this movie in droves is there is too many Star Wars movies. They are diluting the series.
Yeah, you've said that a lot. Like, they used to come out every 10 years, and now they come out every...
6 months ago, there was a star. Yeah. It was an event every 4 years. Every 6 months.
Yeah, but if you're Disney and you paid $4 billion or whatever for that franchise, you're gonna crank them out every 6 months if you can. And I think what this movie, to your point, says is maybe you can't. So somebody from Entertainment Weekly...
They waited 2 years.
Someone from Entertainment Weekly said something really interesting. They said, I didn't love this movie, I didn't love Alden, but they laid the groundwork for a sequel really well. They said, this looks really good at the end in terms of setting something up. And you know what they suggested? That it's not the next movie about him, but it's about Crispin Glover. No, give me the right name.
Donald Glover.
Donald Glover, thank you. I started to say Danny
Glover. Lando.
They said, make a Lando movie. They make a Lando movie that has Alden in it instead of the other way around. And I agree. I think that if you're Disney and you put this movie out and you lost $50 million, you look at what works and what doesn't work. And what doesn't work is an Alden movie, and what works is a Danny Glover movie, is a Donald Glover movie.
I think they're coming out to use a movie terminology, too fast and furious.
You know why you're wrong? If they're good, you can't bring them out fast enough.
We both thought that, but the audiences didn't agree.
I'm telling you, if it's good...
What's this? You're always quoting the audience rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
I have no idea.
Well, I don't know. I think...
The audience voted by not showing up.
I think if you waited 2 years, you didn't have a Star Wars movie in 2 years, and you put this thing out... I think it would have made a lot more money, but what can I say?
Look, I'll agree with you in one sense. Disney needs to slow it down a little. They need to tease rather than try to please and bring them out a little less frequently. I agree with that. You're right about that.
I'll shoot down my own theory, though.
Oh, boy.
Okay, this Marvel Cinematic Universe, you know, there's just...
But they're all very different from each other.
They come out every 3 months with, oh, it's the new Thor movie. Oh, it's the new Captain America movie. Oh, all of them are together in the Avengers. Well, we've got the television series.
But they've successfully found like things like Black Panther that we didn't really know about, or we did know about, we didn't care about, that they've been able to revive. We know everything about the Star Wars franchise. That's the problem. They can't come up with a Wookiee movie. They can't come up with...
So are they going to slow it down before we move on? You think they're going to slow it down? What do you think, Bill?
Probably not.
Keep churning out stuff. Well, they're going to make a Star Wars
The machine is already pumping out two more. So.
They're going to make a TV series. Agents of something is the Marvel...
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or something?
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., yeah.
Well, that's already a TV show.
Yeah, I'm saying, so there's a Marvel TV show. Now there's going to be a Star Wars TV show, so... Again, you know, it's just, I wonder if, like, the 70s movies, the disaster movies in the 70s, Towering Inferno, Poseidon Adventure, Swarm, if there's going to be a fatigue factor and all of a sudden this is just going to burn out, you know, in a couple of years.
Well, to Marvel's credit, their movies are very different from each other. Thor Ragnarok is a completely different movie than Avengers Infinity War.
As is Deadpool.
Is Deadpool. They're very different movies.
What about the raccoon one?
Guardians of the Galaxy was a very different kind of movie than any of the Avengers.
That's back to my point. There's all these characters in that universe that we don't know that much about, but we know everything about. What's next? R2-D2 the movie? No, I don't think so, although Disney would like that.
How they build C-3PO. The origin story. Who knows? I hope not, but who knows? You know, look, it's called show business, and business is... It's all, they're all about making money. And if these things do make money, I mean, this did not make the money they wanted. So I don't know how this is going to affect it. I don't know if they're going to slow it down. I don't know if you think there's going to be any change to their plan.
No, they're going to assume they picked the wrong guy. That's what they're going to assume.
They're going to blame.
They're going to assume that, yeah, Alden gets all the shit.
He's going to get the Taylor Kitsch. What was that movie that
John Carter?
Yeah, which was the biggest bomb, or was the biggest bomb. I don't know if it still is in Disney history. So Taylor Kitsch got kind of like.
But that was a completely original character. That was, they were just trying to build something there. That was something there where that to me was the intelligent bet. Like, find a character that nobody knows about and put all the chips on.
What was it called again?
John Carter for the third time.
Yeah, but there's been Prince of Persia bombed. I mean, the Jake Gyllenhaal thing. There's a
Prince
lot
of Persia. This is like, well, the joke I do in my act is you're building an action movie around the guy who I'm pretty sure was the chick in Brokeback Mountain. I mean, like, so that's not going to work.
Well, you know, I don't know. Heath Ledger was the other guy in that, and he won an Oscar posthumously for playing the Joker in the Batman movie, so I don't know. But
yeah, that's
right.
A good
but you
point.
Digress. Let's go.
Okay, so look, moving on. I saw RBG, notorious RBG, which is great. You know, they address that in there.
You Ginsburged me.
You know, the fact that she goes, I have a lot of similarities with the notorious B.I.G., you know? And it was very funny. So it's her life story. It's a really interesting documentary. I think a little long.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg is who we're talking
Bader Ginsburg,
about.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the esteemed Supreme Court justice, championing liberal causes on the Supreme Court, no longer a Democratic or a liberal majority in the Supreme Court. Just her dissenting opinions have become very important to the left because she enacts change even though the Supreme Court, we've learned in the movie, might vote against her opinion. Her dissenting opinion enacts laws that are changed in Congress.
Does she have groupies? Does the movie like
there's shirts
the movie,
out that the,
yeah, yeah,
she gives out
I
shirts
imagine
to
that.
People and stuff?
I haven't seen it. Let me just say I haven't seen it.
First of all, what's interesting, the beginning of the movie is it talks about how women, you know, when she came up, when she first went to school, she was one of 8 or 9 people in Harvard Law School out of 8 or 9, I'm sorry, women out of a class of 500. And nobody wanted to hire her when she got out of there. She went. I mean, she graduated with like top honors at Harvard Law School. She wasn't even like, okay, a woman graduated Harvard Law School. She was like at the top of the class.
Did she practice law?
Well, she couldn't get a job. I mean, she would go to these top law firms. Actually, people even would recommend her, and like somebody like who was even graduated on a lower ranking.
So the way Trump became president, anyone can become a Supreme Court justice.
Well, what happened was, first of all, she was beautiful, which is you would never
really?
Know. You would never. This is great.
Wow.
You would never know this from looking at Ruth Bader Ginsburg. She was, and I'm watching this with my wife, and I'm going, my God, this is like an extremely attractive woman. Talks about her 50-year marriage to her husband, who she met in undergraduate. It was either graduate school, Harvard Law, or undergraduate school. They had a great marriage. He was a top tax attorney. And
did
he
leave
to
us?
Meet her.
Did he pass?
Yeah, he passed a few years ago. But he wanted to meet her because she was so attractive. And when you look at these 16 millimeter or 8 millimeter home movies and photographs of her,
so was she a model?
No, she wasn't a model. She was a brainiac.
She couldn't get a job. What did she do?
She talks about the fact that she was attracted to her husband because. This shows you how good-looking she was, that all the other guys who wanted to go out with her were not interested in her brain. And this guy that she wound up dating and then marrying was attracted to her mind. I mean, she was a really...
That's how I met Mrs. McCuddy.
Very intelligent woman. But she was a looker, and everybody wanted to go
looker.
Out with her.
There we go.
You go, go...
They get to B'nai B'rith dinners, huh?
Neil Rosen with a 50s reference.
Go.
Thank you, Hef.
Go look, go Google images.
So what was her first job?
Okay,
how did she get a legal job?
So what she did is, so nobody wanted to hire her when she got out of law school because it was unheard of for a woman to be a lawyer. They couldn't have a woman men's mentality of actually representing clients. So what she did is she partnered with another woman, and they went after cases that she felt championed civil rights and stuff like that on her own.
With women as the
no,
not necessarily
first,
just
no,
civil
her,
rights.
Her first case was not involving a woman. I forgot what the case was, but it was a landmark case. And she
so the movie stuck with you. That's the important thing.
She kept taking these landmark cases on and bringing them to the Supreme Court and winning and changing law in the
in D.C. or where was she? Where was she based? Do you remember? So was she a Washington, D.C. lawyer or was she with a firm in like...
Well, she wound up working in D.C. before she became a Supreme Court justice. And Bill Clinton nominated... Apparently, they were a great team.
He fucked her first, of course, right? Is that
in it? Her husband were a great team. He was funny and outgoing, and she was very shy and withdrawn. And apparently, there was a long list of Supreme Court nominees when that vacancy came up. And Bill Clinton, she was like on the list, but she was like number like 50.
Well, wait, whoa. You keep jumping around. So how was she a judge anywhere before she was a Supreme Court justice? Was she?
I don't know. I don't remember.
The movie doesn't talk about that.
No, I don't think so.
But she was a lawyer, obviously,
She was a very well-renowned lawyer who got a lot of people. When lawyers go into court, they'll quote cases that she won as precedent, and she was known. But when she gets to be Supreme Court Justice, again, she was like number 50 on like a list. But her husband campaigned for her. Like, she would have never done that. And then when Clinton met her,
the man behind the woman,
immediately when he met her, they spent the afternoon in the White House together. He goes, this is my
Lincoln
nominee.
Bedroom.
Well, she was no, Bill. But you know, so anyway, the movie's a little long, but that's my only complaint. It's interesting about her cult following.
Long because it makes its point early on and then just...
Yeah, you know, but...
Does she get along well with the other justices?
Yeah, well, she had a tremendous...
Do they hang out?
With Scalia.
Right.
She had... I don't know if you remember this. They went to, India together and rode an elephant. And they had a...
So that's a Republican reference.
They had a tremendously great friendship. And they were on completely polar opposites politically. They would yell and scream at each other on the bench. But they had chemistry. And they would... They both had a love for opera.
Do the justices hang together as a rule?
They show you Ruth Bader Ginsburg gets a part in an opera. She loves opera.
Is Kate McKinnon in the movie?
Yes, she is.
Does Ruth like her impression of her?
You see Ruth Bader Ginsburg watching it, and she's laughing. She goes, it's nothing like me, but it's funny. I think it's funny. And that's
great. I love that.
And she's a real character, and she's real smart, and she's really enacted a lot of change in this country. And right now...
Do you see her house? Do you see her place and where she lives in D.C. and stuff?
You see her granddaughter, you know, spending time with her granddaughter... looking through old photos and stuff like that. But she says she's going to do this she's 84 now, or at least at the time of the shooting of the film, but she's going to continue to do this until she goes, look, this woman works to like 18 to 19 hours a day, and she's 84 years old. And she goes, I'm going to continue to do the job while I can do it at full steam.
So let me ask you this.
And the opera is her wind down time.
Is the process... talked about like how they decide to see different cases and like does she but she must have like a staff of like 10 or 15 people that
not addressed
bring
it's
her
really
cases
look,
and go
really a look at her life from her upbringing to her college to being a lawyer.
What kind of car does she drive?
Doesn't tell you that.
Okay,
but you see her working out at the end of the movie.
Yeah,
got a heavy. She has a personal trainer in the gym and she goes. She works out like I don't know whether it's the gym and.
So, okay, Mr. Long, it's too long. What would you have cut out? What were you bored by?
Oh, I just think a couple of cases that they examined, you know, like there was a lot of cases and took you through the process of how she won the cases or how she argued for the cases on the Supreme Court. So I would have just lost maybe two or three of those and just maybe taken 15 minutes to 20 minutes out of the movie. And I still think you would have had the same effect on the movie. But again, it's not like, wow, this is way too long. Don't see it. I recommend it.
Well, in theaters now, but you'll have to find it because it's not. I was in the Hamptons this weekend, and it was.
It's there.
It's there, but like it's no. I mean, but it's like you know, it's a limited release.
I'm sure it's coming to streaming soon,
right?
Or Channel 13.
And when it does, you highly recommend it.
I recommend it. I give it on my Big Apple rating scale out of a possible 4. I would give
people still remember that.
A solid 3 apples, you know, a solid 3.
3, maybe, not mealy apples.
Maybe 3
solid
and a quarter,
apples.
Even though, you know, that's what I would do. All right, moving on.
Although on the scales of justice, three apples would outweigh.
All right, okay, moving on. McCuddy wants to talk about Westworld, and McCuddy and Brigoli want to talk about Killing Eve. So let's start with one of those two things.
Well, I'll start with Killing Eve just because I had forgotten about this. Somebody on our podcast like a year ago told me about this and was talking about it and ranting about it and saying how great it was. Sandra Oh is this actress who our friend Robert Wall used to employ in Arliss.
Alexander Payne.
No, she was married to Alexander Payne, I think. I don't know if they're still. No, they famously split, right?
They're not together.
Sandra Oh is a very accomplished actress, and I don't think she gets her due because I think she's been in a lot of stuff where she was just the Asian woman who was cast to be.
She was on Grey's Anatomy for many seasons.
Yeah, so she's
great
accomplished.
Alexander Payne film.
Sideways.
Sideways. Yeah,
she's great in that.
So here's the thing: like I'm recommending it only because I kept walking in and out of the room when my wife was watching.
Why don't you tell us what it's about?
Well, I can tell you very little about it.
Actually, I've seen all the episodes.
He's seen all of them. So I'm just going to tell you that Mrs. McCuddy was watching this thing. I watched a few minutes of each episode because I kept walking in the room when she was watching it, and she kept catching me up. What I saw was stellar. It's based in London.
Right.
And I'll let Bill pick up where it goes from there.
Yeah, it's about a secret agent hired to find a hired killer on the international scene.
And it's an HBO show or a Netflix show?
No, it's a BBC.
BBC America.
BBC America.
Okay. And,
Isn't that where that Dark Mirror, Black Mirror?
Yes.
Dark
Mirror show? Yeah. Oh, you're very hip, Mr. Rosen.
Kind of in that mold. It's just two female protagonists, both characters are actually obsessed with each other. And it's interesting. There's a sort of sexual, sort of psychotic bond between the two.
Well, the killer has some lesbian scenes. I have seen those.
Yeah, actually, Jodie Comer, who plays Villanelle, said that she thinks her character prefers women to men, but she'll use a man if he's around, and that happens at one
point. Boy, I'm in that marriage.
And the star of the show
is both Sandra Oh and Jodie Comer.
Okay, so that
and Phoebe Waller-Bridge, interestingly enough. Is the series creator. She's the voice of the robot in Solo, A Star Wars Story, the female robot.
So you would highly recommend this.
I do, yeah, absolutely.
And based on what I saw, I'm going to start watching all of them. My wife finished it this weekend and said, you have to watch this. It's great. And so I do whatever my wife says.
That's right. And Bill was watching a show that I gave up on last year.
Oh, Westworld.
Westworld, yeah.
Yeah, okay, the
so
thing
is that
about
my next program to is that my next thing to watch?
Did
is
you it, watch the whole season last year?
Never watched an episode of it. Just saw the Yul Brynner movie
Okay, thanks, Grandpa.
Same premise, right?
It was
robots
dark
take over the
and
amusement
interesting
park, right?
Last year. This year it's dark and not as what the chat rooms keep saying is that this is the great year because it explains everything about the Westworld setup and what their real agenda is.
Aren't the robots taking over this?
The robots are killing everybody. They're shooting everybody. And they want to get out.
And they
want
to. And last year they did not do that.
Well, they didn't know any better. This year they know better. This year Dolores, who is
knows
what the agenda is from the company that created them.
Oh, okay.
And wants to break out, get everybody out of here. Let's go to this valley where there's going to apparently be a door, like in the Truman Show, where you just open it and can leave.
This sounds a lot like that Alicia Vikander movie.
Ex Machina.
Yeah, Ex Machina.
It's actually a little more the subplot of Counterpart, which I told you guys to watch, and on Stars, which I will recommend again, with J.K. Simmons, has an extremely similar subplot to this whole thing. I just think, look, here's what I'm going to tell you. I can't recommend it to you to start this year because every week I go, what the fuck happened here? However, one good thing or one interesting thing happens in every hour that I go, oh my God, I have to keep watching this. Okay. So that's the only recommendation I can give it.
All right. Well, I saw the premiere episode, which debuted last week on HBO, of a new series called Secession. And this is produced by Adam McKay and Will Ferrell. Adam McKay directs.
So it should be really funny.
No, it's not funny at all. And Frank Rich, who was the famed New York Times drama critic and then became the op-ed guy at the New York Times, and then was one of the executive producers of Veep. So now he's one of the executive producers of this. And it's kind of interesting.
It's based on a BBC also.
What's his name?
Brian Cox.
Brian Cox is this, he's 80 years old.
Patriarch.
He's,
again, I say for the benefit of the audience, Neil's not going to listen, but it's based on a British series.
Okay. Well, he's the patriarch. That's the word I'm looking up
That's what I said like 5 minutes ago.
There you go. Well, I don't listen. Of this multi-billion dollar corporation, which he's stepping down and turning over.
And he has sons.
He has sons and a daughter.
And a daughter.
And they all want a piece of this thing, and they're all kind of struggling for control of
this. So it's the Rupert Murdoch story.
Maybe there are shades of that. So in the
shades, he has two sons and a daughter who all wanted to run the company.
And he had an Asian wife in this
Alan,
and an Asian,
Alan Ruck. If
there's an Asian wife in the Brian Cox movie.
there's Alan Ruck is one of the sons. Kieran Culkin is one of the sons. What happens is that the very opening scene, Brian Cox wakes up and he doesn't know who he is and where he is. And
oh, really?
So you kind of like, and then all of a sudden he pulls it together, and I won't spoil the end of the episode, but he's sort of like having a mental breakdown. And then he says,
"Is he just for the purposes of this first episode, so you're not giving too much away, was he acting or he really was having a senior moment? Or is that part of the reveal? Was he pretending to be fucked up, or he was fucked up
in the middle of the
night. Okay.
There was nobody but the.
There
was nobody to witness that. So he really was kind of messed up. But then he pulls it together and he goes in, and one of the sons is like going to make this deal, this big deal for this internet media company, and it doesn't go through. And Brian Cox.
This is so.
Brian Cox says that. I'm sorry. I know that I'm sorry. He's a scumbag, this guy. He's a real bastard. Like, the son was planning on just taking over the company. Like, they picked one of the sons, and the other ones had shares, and they were on the board. And he goes, "I've decided I'm coming back to the company, and I'm going to run things, and you're not taking the reins of the company." He goes, "For how long?" He goes, "5 years." He goes, "5 years?" He goes, "Well, maybe 10 years. So he decides he wants to run the company again. And everybody is pissed off in the family.
Wah.
And he's really, like, not a nice guy. It's his 80th birthday. Everybody, look, I bought you, you're a watch guy, Bill McCuddy. So some guy, that everybody's, like, courting this guy and clamoring for this guy's attention. "Look, I got you this watch. It's a Patek Philippe watch, you know?" And he's going, he just, like, takes it, goes, "Oh, okay." And he just hands it to, like, the maid or something. Like, he could give a shit.
"I bought it on eBay last week."
And, you know, everybody's just kissing this guy's ass. And you know,
is it good? Is it good?
To Logan. Logan is great. Is it good? I'm intrigued enough.
You're going to watch the second one.
And something happens at the end of the first episode, which I am not going to divulge, because that's the very end of that episode.
Divulge it. Come on.
But I'm intrigued enough by the thing to continue watching. So I'm saying, if you're looking.
He ejaculates.
I'm intrigued enough to continue watching the show and give it a look. I think there's this potential there. Bill McCuddy and I saw the season finale or series.
You keep
finale.
Saying that. Is that really the there? He contracted
to do six episodes for Netflix. Okay. I don't think that there was no like I'm doing that and one, you know. One,
we're talking
one,
about one, David Letterman's you know, show on
done.
Netflix.
You know, I mean, I think
before we say anything about Howard Stern, based on the six you've seen, or you've seen all six, you've seen
the
like
only
four
one
or
I've
five.
Liked is this episode. It's the only one.
Oh,
I've
you liked.
Liked
this one. So, like, do you think he'll do more? Do you think David Letterman will do more based
Absolutely.
On this?
What is he? He's doing six episodes a year. I mean, he has nothing else to do. He said.
You know what was interesting?
In the episode that he wanted to sit, he told Howard Stern that he wanted to sit down. Howard Stern asks him, you know, this show might work better without an audience. And he goes, well, this is what I want to do. I just want to sit down and talk to people in front of
one of the cool things they do in this, before you tell anything about this episode, is they both kind of admire Jerry Seinfeld in that Seinfeld was done with his show.
Oh, he loves comedians and cars, got to basically do
whatever he wants. Well, no, but that's the point. Like, they both said, who else would have thought a show would be driving around in cars and going to get coffee? And that if you're somebody like Jerry Seinfeld, or if you're somebody like Howard Stern, or if you're somebody like David Letterman, you've gone through the process of having done something that at that point, after which anyone will let you do anything you want to do. So they were very in awe of Jerry.
But let's realize, if you want to look at the Jerry Seinfeld series, Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, that everybody turned that series down. If you listen to
Jerry, they had to go to Crackle or whatever it was called.
He didn't even go to Crackle initially. And I watched that show from the beginning.
Well, wait, we're making way too much of a point out of that.
Hold on a second.
I just wanted to say that, like, they admired the fact that you got to a point in your career the way Jay Leno is on CNBC right now.
To your point, what I'm saying is that that initial series that Jerry wanted to do, that he wound up doing, Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, was not even on, who even heard of Crackle, was not even on Crackle, to my understanding, in the beginning. It was just on the web. He didn't even promote it. You had to kind of follow him on Twitter.
But look what happened.
Then it went on Crackle. And then Netflix. Netflix has got money. They're just throwing money at it.
Right. So that's right place, right time. There's no question about it.
But I enjoy that series. And now getting back to the episode of the...
I think this is one of the worst of the series, actually. Because Howard ended up
like the Malala episode.
Howard ended up. I like the Tina Fey episode. I like the George Clooney episode.
You like the Obama.
The Obama was kind of. I thought actually, apropos of this conversation, that Jerry Seinfeld's Comedians Getting Coffee with Obama was much better.
Much better. Shorter and better.
But this is, so basically we're describing a series that you're sure that David Letterman still wants to do that you're
not
going to watch.
What I'm saying is that if you watch...
So wait, what I was going to say, let me finish, was that, not to pull a Lisa Rossman on you, let me finish, but was that... I thought Howard interviewed David Letterman more than David Letterman interviewed Howard.
Well, that's been the problem for me with this entire series, is that Letterman, who we've discussed in past episodes, is kind of like, I've read that he just doesn't care about being funny anymore. And he said point blank, I just want to talk to people and interview people in front of an audience.
But he likes letting his audiences do all the talk. I mean, his audience. He likes letting his guests do all the talking. Thank you.
I watched something on YouTube recently, which was a several-part interview.
Porn related?
Donahue from 1970 with Johnny Carson. And Phil Donahue asked maybe 7 questions for this entire thing, and he just goes around the audience and takes phone calls, and all these other people were asking Johnny Carson questions. And some of these questions, since they're not professional interviewers, are just moronic questions, you know?
Where do your ideas come from?
Just moronic. And Johnny was very respectful in answering these questions, but I'm like, it would have been infinitely more interesting if you had a professional interviewer like Phil Donahue come up with some interesting questions. Going to the Letterman thing, you know, I was more interested in hearing what Howard had to say. Howard walked out with a beard. I think Letterman's beard, as I've said, is ridiculous, and I can't even look at him half the time on the screen. And at one particular point in the middle of the interview, Howard pulls the beard out again, and Letterman goes, get that off. I can't get that off. He goes, well, that's how you look. That's what you look
Howard says, you're looking in a mirror.
Because that's what you look like. And it's funny, Letterman couldn't look at it, and he's going, well, you know, I forget I have the beard. I'm not looking at myself.
But yeah, but, you know, Letterman fans will say that they respect that that's what he wants to do. And Netflix, actually, Howard says, don't you think Netflix thought you were going to shave the beard before when they gave you this deal? They gave you a show. Don't you think they thought you were going to shave? And he's like, oh, maybe, but I hate shaving.
Yeah. Well, when you're at that level, David Letterman level, you could do really whatever the hell
that's
you
the
do.
Whole point I made right. from the top of this conversation.
I'm going to your point.
You get to be that guy and you can do whatever you want to do. And you know what? David Letterman goes, fuck you if you don't want me to do 6 more of these. That's why I think you're wrong that this is definitely going to get picked up again.
I think I'm saying it will continue.
As long as David Letterman wants to do
no,
it.
No, I think Letterman enjoys... You're saying... What am I wrong
What about? I'm saying is you're assuming it's going to happen again for another 6 episodes, and well, I'm saying only if David Letterman wants to do it.
I think Letterman enjoys doing this, which he said in the thing, he likes doing this. I think he'll probably get another 6 guests or 5 guests and just do another season.
I will tell you one thing if you watch this is that it was, as I said, mostly Howard talking or interviewing Letterman. And at one point it starts to get interesting and Letterman stands up and goes, "We're done. It's over." Well, do you remember that? It was like a very abrupt ending. He was like, "That's enough."
If you listen to Howard Stern on his radio show, he said they talked for 2 hours. He was really concerned about how they were going to edit it down to 15 minutes.
Yeah, I heard him like,
and then he said, why did they do a cutaway with Dave riding a horse in Utah? He goes like, what?
Well, that's been something in this whole series but Tina Fey, they went to Billy Guy and they did like, Billy Guy, am I saying the right, the jazz guy in Chicago. He seems for some reason to want to tag everything with some completely unrelated thing.
Mm. No, but the Billy Guy thing.
Billy Guy or Buddy Guy?
Buddy Guy.
Buddy
Thank
Guy
you.
Had a had a tie-in. That was the Tina Fey
episode. Tina Fey.
Where Tina Fey was saying that was her favorite restaurant.
But I will say...
Is there any tie-in that you...
I don't care. This thing about they're riding out in the middle of nowhere and they're talking about how Trump has decided that some of these national parks can now be condos or whatever they want to be. That you should see. That is very important at the end of this completely unrelated... you're right. I can't think of any reason why it was tacked onto it.
Nor could Howard Stern.
Oh, he's been talking about that on the air?
I don't understand, because I would rather put another 5-6 minutes of my interview as opposed to putting...
Well, of course, that's what Howard Stern would say.
Yeah, but it is kind of like out of left field.
Yeah, it is, but I will say it's very important. I mean, I'm not trying to be Republican or Democrat, but...
I guess...
They're riding around in what looks like the Grand Canyon, and this woman says, because of our new president... This now can all be...
Well, David Letterman obviously wants to be, has some social...
Yeah, has an agenda.
Wants to be part in the show, and I guess...
But that, to me, is another show. And Netflix would give him that if he wanted to do another show that wants to be more socially responsible. That's what they should do. What else is on the list?
What else?
Are we done?
I think we're done.
Wow, we're tired, but it's a good tired.
This is when we ask me what's coming up next
week. What's coming up next week, Bill?
Well...
And he's got notes.
I have a list, and there are only 2 things on it. We have Tag...
Oh, yeah.
We're really looking forward to Tag.
Well, Bill's seen it, and Bill's interviewed Hannibal Buress and
Annabelle Wallace from the movie.
Yeah.
And also, we have The Incredibles 2.
Which is supposed to be one of the big summer movies. In fact, I watched a show on CUNY the other night where the people that were interviewed there, that's right, it was me and Lisa and Neil, said Incredibles 2 could be one of the big movies of the summer.
That's true. And when I did Show spot last week, I also talked about The Incredibles and how everybody was looking
forward to mic drop and Neil name drops. Well, we will look forward to that next week.
So, and what do we do here every week, Bill?
We watch the crap so you don't have to.
We do.
And there is a lot of crap.
And Bill Bregoli, is there anything else that you want to talk about this week?
No, but next week we'll have Hannibal Buress talking about strip clubs.
Oh, awesome.
That's great.
That's the man, by the way, to anyone who doesn't know that name just off the top of their head, brought down Bill Cosby.
Oh, this is an episode that...
See, David Letterman didn't interview him. I interviewed him, so there.
There you go. A little tease. Does he talk about? Because we'll talk about.
Goes to strip clubs.
But he talks a little bit about how he did not when he incorporated that into his routine.
He doesn't talk about it at all.
The studio wouldn't let it.
Okay. All right. If you want to follow Bill McCuddy, it's at Bill McCuddy. And if you want to follow me, it's at Neil Rosenapples, both on Twitter. And Bill Bregoli, if you want to contact him, as always, write him a letter.
That's it. Simple enough. Snail mail.
Or contact us. And I want to thank you, as always, for sitting around talking movies with us. And we'll sit around talking movies again with you next week.